Cook, boys and girls.
It's wild, it's wacky, it's slick, it's savvy. It's the Madcap Daffy Fracture Ding-a-ling Ring-a-ding Loony Zany Side-splitting Rib-tickling Slap-happy Scuzzy Dreary Irksome Tedious Banal Pointless Smutty World of
The Bob and Jeff Show, starring Bob Lutz.
I've had a pretty uniform existence. I could depend on things. I mean, there's been upheaval, but it's all just happening at once.
That's true.
Jeff Lutz.
This is all happening now. It's not going to happen over the next 15 years.
Oh, that's true.
97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. It's a Tuesday edition, the Bob and Jeff Show here on KFH Radio. Bob Lutz, Jeff Lutz with you for the next couple of hours as we wind down here on the Bob and Jeff Show. We got a bunch of guests today. Jeff Lutz is with me as co-host. Max Power back in our studio. Brent Chemnitz will join us at approximately 5:20 this afternoon. Longtime Shocker pitching coach. Just had a performance lab named after him at the Wichita State Baseball Complex.
There's one thing I think of when I hear the name Brent Chemnitz. It's two things, actually. One is performance. The other is lab. So there's no better.
What does that mean?
There's no better guy to have a
Did
performance.
Did you try that out?
No, that was perfect.
What does it mean?
Whatever you want it to mean. Haven't you seen Kings of Comedy? I go to computer.
Yeah, they were funny.
I go to computer school. Well, nothing about you says computer or school.
So you're telling me Chemnitz, nothing about him says performance.
Or lab.
Well, I'm going to tell him you said that.
No, I love Brandon. Of course he has earned and deserves that honor. What all is going into the performance lab? I know this was announced last night. Do we have any?
Not last night at the Shocker First Pitch Banquet.
Well, I thought that was last night.
No, that wasn't last night.
It was like
night.
Saturday, right?
Saturday, yeah.
Okay. I get my days confused.
So we'll visit with Brent coming up at 5:20. At 5:40, Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. And we'll go deeper into the Chiefs as we did with Adam Teicher yesterday, but these are really interviews kind of to say thank you for everything you've contributed to this show over the years. And Jesse has been front and center in our Chiefs coverage here on the Bob and Jeff Show, so we look forward to talking to him. 3:00, Wichita Sunrise Academy coach Kyle Lynch said we got a big tournament coming up in Wichita this weekend. He'll be leading Sunrise into that tournament. They are, of course, as always, nationally ranked in the high school rankings across the country. All these years, I don't think Wichita has ever quite figured out what to do with Sunrise.
What do you mean?
Here they are. They're in our community, and we don't quite know what to do. We don't know how to go see them. I guess we can go see them at this tournament this
week.
Yeah,
of course.
But do they count as... You know, to me, Buddy Hield's a Wichitan. He's a graduate of Sunrise Academy.
Then claim him.
Why can't I claim him?
Well, mostly because he's a Bahamian, but if you want to call him a Wichitan.
But if you graduate from high school here, aren't you one of us?
I don't know. You'd have to ask Buddy how he feels about that. He's playing with the Sixers. I'm sure they're coming into...
I thought he was with the...
Warriors. Yeah. Whoever he's with. I'm sure they're coming into Oklahoma City at some point. You can go down and ask him.
Well, I've always enjoyed Buddy Hield. I like watching him play, especially at OU.
Not with the Indiana Pacers.
And at 6:20 today, Derby football coach Brandon Clark will join us. Brandon, part of our army of high school coaches that we've interviewed here over the years, and Brandon's been on many times. Of course, he coaches at my alma mater. Have we ever had a North High coach on the show?
Randy's been on.
We had their soccer coach, Cliff Wolfschlager.
It's Kurt Wolfschlager. And was he on?
Yes. Cliff, you went to high school with.
Kurt was there too, but he's my sister's age, so I don't know if we ever actually were in the same school together. I think he's 4 years ahead.
I remember a lot of those kids you went to high school with. Their names.
Sure.
Yeah, you coming up on a reunion, aren't you?
I don't know.
25-year reunion?
Next year, I guess that would be.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do we have reunions anymore? It's like they're like weekends for alumni. They don't actually do class by class thing. I don't. We need to figure that out.
Derby had its 50th year reunion for my class.
Wait, I'm only 25 years behind you. That's crazy.
Just last year, 2023. What am I thinking? Yes, 2023.
All right, 28 years behind. That's a little better.
Oh, you're coming up on me.
Yeah, but I'll never catch you, and that's what counts.
1 month from today, the big 7-0. Can you imagine?
Feeling good about it?
Have you regarded me as an old person?
Oh, yeah.
For how long?
15, 20 years.
Really?
Yeah, once you hit 50, and I'm still rolling here at 22, yeah, you're an old guy.
So you've regarded me as old?
Sure.
Do I act old?
It's a loaded question. I don't know. I don't really know what that means.
See, you're neither. You're like not an old soul. You're not a young soul.
I'm both.
You're just there.
I'm just me, man.
Yeah, you're just there.
I make no apologies.
And we appreciate you.
For my personality. It's not probably going to change a whole lot.
Well, it doesn't need to change.
That's what I'm saying.
Now, we're not going to... This is going to be our last week. We won't be on for Valentine's Day, 10 days from today. So I'm going to go ahead and ask you, have you made any plans?
No.
Will you?
I don't know what we're going to do for Valentine's Day.
Is that an important holiday for you?
I don't know. It's well regarded. I don't know if it's super important. Maybe we'll go out to dinner. I just like spending time with the kid, you know? The kid being my wife.
Well, you can do that in a romantic way, can't you?
Well, it's always romantic.
I mean, I don't know.
Anytime you get together and have, you know, alone time, it's a romantic thing. And it doesn't have to be sweep somebody off their feet with red roses and, you know, wear a tuxedo out and, you know, do all that. Just spending time together. That's plenty romantic.
So my wife will hear this because she's upstairs as we do the show. So... Yesterday, you know, we've been having a series of people, including yours truly, take her back and forth to Wellington when she has to work, because currently her eyesight is a little off and she's not driving, although we hope that's rectified shortly. So we've had this group of people, and we found somebody who lives here in Wichita but works in Wellington.
Nice.
Carter Green. You know who I'm talking about?
I do.
He's Jamie Green's husband.
Correct.
So I took her out to their house yesterday morning, and he transported her to Wellington, which is tremendous. We very much appreciated it. But I get a text from my wife, and I don't know if she's hearing this.
she probably is.
She'd probably kill me, and she may. But I get a text from my wife yesterday. I told her to notify me when she got there, and she said, I just arrived. Everything's good. She asked me about something. I said, okay. And she says, I really like Carter. He's a genius. And I said, genius? She said, yes. And I said, how so? And she said, I'll talk to you later. And how would you feel?
He's a smart guy by all accounts.
No question, but how would you feel? How should I feel?
Well, I don't think you should feel any kind of way at all. There's no, what do you think you should feel?
I shouldn't feel like, wait a minute, she's never told me I'm a genius.
No, there's a reason for that.
Why do you think that is?
I assume it's because you're not a genius. But
my borderline?
I don't think so.
Why would you say that?
A genius?
Why would you say
that? You're a smart guy, but I don't know. I don't know if it rises to the level of genius.
Well, haven't I done a couple things?
Did we get to the bottom of why Carter's a genius?
Well, he's a musician, and he does scores, and he plays many different instruments. And my wife, being interested in music, found that to be indicative of genius.
Well, he might be a musical genius. That's pretty impressive.
Well, she didn't
work.
Say musical genius.
Well, there's levels to it, you know. It's I don't know if he's gonna be a NASA technician. Maybe he can, but if his genius is in music, I suppose that counts.
So wait a minute for you.
If it was someone maybe around my age or someone that they had regular contact with, I might just be taken aback a little bit, but this isn't, this doesn't seem that threatening to me.
What if I'd gotten a ride from a woman 15 years younger than me, 20 years younger, I don't know, whatever, and texted back to my wife, boy, this woman's a genius.
I don't think she'd be threatened at all.
Why are you going along with, why aren't you supporting me?
You asked me, though. What support do you need?
Oh, just, I understand how you feel, Dad. I mean, it's, you know, you don't want to, you don't
you didn't
want,
even say you felt a way. You just asked how should
I
you feel.
I just felt like, wait a minute, what, we go right from, okay, thanks for the ride.
You're
a genius? I mean.
The first instinct would be, what about me? But once we've solved that, I don't know. Is there anything else?
You know, in 30 minutes in the ride from West Wichita to Wellington, we've determined.
That's a little more than, that's probably 45
that
minutes.
He's a genius? I mean, she's been on many rides with me. What am I?
Well, if you're driving that fast, then maybe she's too scared.
I don't know what that means.
You can't get to West Wichita and to Wellington in 30 minutes.
Well, close.
Hmm.
It's Wellington's about 24 miles, 27 miles from Wichita. Once you get on the turnpike at mile marker 42, the exit for Wellington is mile marker 19, and then it's about 4 miles into Wellington.
Well, let's see. I'm going to get the maps up from here to Wellington. Maybe it is 30 minutes. Maybe I'm just way off here. But I'll look. Wellington, Kansas, 41 minutes.
From where we are right now, yes. But from mile marker 42, which is the South Wichita Turnpike Exchange, to Wellington is 23 miles.
Okay.
And then it's another 4 miles.
Well, you don't live at mile marker 42.
Where Debbie works. What I'm saying is, I think I'd need more than 30 miles to determine whether someone's a genius.
Fair enough.
Maybe a few rides.
Yeah, maybe.
Because I've given a lot of rides to my wife, and not once has she returned from one of those and said, "Well, you're a genius."
Do you talk to her?
Sure, I do. I tell her all the things I know.
Well, maybe that's why she doesn't think you're a genius. Maybe it's too one-sided for her.
I don't know. You've not been of help at all.
I'm not really trying to.
You don't really take these situations and run with them.
What do you want me to say?
You don't feed off of them. You don't add to the conversation.
I could.
Right.
But I just chose not.
Why don't you?
I don't know, man. What day is it?
What's wrong, man?
There's nothing wrong.
What's eating you?
Nothing.
What's got you?
I'm all good.
Talk to me.
I'm fantastic.
Let's let the people know.
There's nothing to let people know.
Talk to me.
Pete, you're not L.A. Knight.
I know how to console.
I don't need consolation. I'm not sad about anything.
Well, what's the matter, though?
I'm not upset.
You don't know what day it is?
Yeah, I'm trying to. Yeah, I do know what day it is.
You're a little down?
I wouldn't say that.
What are you?
It's kind of cold outside. I didn't enjoy that.
Now, I get a kick out of changing topics. You know, Misty's down here for most of our shows. And I worry about her when we cease to be doing this. Today she crawled up on Jason Duda's chair.
She did.
Dragged down the blanket and laid on it for
was
a
while. Resting on it. I thought that was a heck of an effort by Misty. Now she knows she's being talked about. So she's coming
down from the chair
for a little affection. And I'm more than happy to give her that affection because she's a good puppy dog.
She's a unique, unique dog.
It was a great, great animal.
Yes, thank you. That makes me feel better.
Well, of course. I would never say a cross word about Misty.
Well, Misty's great. She just makes everyone feel like they're the most important person. And that's awesome.
When in fact, she's the most important person.
Because anybody who comes to the house, Misty gives you a 5-star greeting. Now, she's over it pretty quickly. But for 2 or 3 minutes, it's like, well, whoa.
I think the five-star experience continues after that she's over it because she wants to show you around. Maybe she'll perform for you. She'll go to where you're located and keep you company.
She's very giving. And if we last night, now we're at the mode now, you know what the show is. We're now at a point where she wants to do 3 or 4 per night.
Excellent.
And just can't get enough. And it's turned into mostly a barking excursion.
Well, whatever she needs to do to get that out of her system and be ready for her slumber, I think it's fantastic.
All right, Max, we've come to the point where we need a break. We'll take that break. Brick Chemnitz will join us when we return. Longtime Shocker pitching coach, currently working in development at Wichita State. Just had a performance lab named in his honor for all the work he did for many years as Wichita State's pitching coach. Back in a minute with Brent Chemnitz.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show on 97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Last dance, last chance for love.
Love this song. Last Dance from Donna Summer, The Last Waltz, a musical theme for the week here on the Bob and Jeff Show. Here's Brent Chemnitz joining us on the hotline, longtime pitching coach, Wichita State, currently involved in development for the Shockers. And at the Wichita State first pitch banquet the other night, he got the surprise announcement that Wichita State's named a performance lab in his honor. Hey, Brent.
Bob, how are you?
We're doing good. So Jeff had this to say earlier about this honor for you. He said, Brent's the first person I associate with performance and lab. Thoughts?
Absolutely. Analytics, anything to do with performance, laboratory, anything technical, computer-like, I'm the name that pops into everybody's head first. So it was very fitting for sure.
No question. Well, congratulations on that. Long overdue, and we're proud of you and happy to have that happen. So let's talk about baseball. Certainly a festive atmosphere at the first pitch banquet. What do you think of Brian Green and his team coming up this season? My goodness, it starts in less than 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's crazy. We had a little function at Coke Arena this morning where Christy Bridbinner and Brian Green addressed, you know, some of our boosters. And they're like 10 days out. What's today, Tuesday? They start on a week from Friday. It's 10 days. Christy starts this weekend. It always sneaks up on you. I remember in the coaching days, it's only 9 years ago. It seems like a lifetime in some ways. But I did that for 38 years. And when, you know, the new year passes and all of a sudden you have 5 or 6 weeks and you play. So it's on us. It's here. I'm legitimately optimistic. You always give me a hard time and say, you know, everything is beautiful for me. I'm the promoter. But I legitimately think we're going to be much better. We were a pitch away from getting to a regional last year, which is, you know, extremely difficult when you think about him taking over a roster with like 3 or 4 players. So I think a lot of good things, you know, and you mentioned the first pitch banquet. Yeah, I think we had close to 600 there, which may have set a record.
Yeah, and I'll go back to the performance lab because I saw the the video that Kevin Saul or the baseball program put out on social media, and you were moved to tears, and I thought that was very sweet, in a good way, of course. I don't know how you feel about the word sweet, but it was sweet. What that moment caught you off guard, am I wrong?
Well, yes, it did. Let's get one thing out there right now. I would suck as a coach right now. I'm way too soft. You know, it's cold out today. There's zero chance I'd want to be outside. When it's windy, I want to get inside. So I come to tears. Gene, we're tearing up. We're like the two softest guys in Wichita. I think having a building or a lab or whatever named after you is not something that pops into your head. Everybody says, did you know? Were you surprised? Any idea? The only thing that I maybe should have picked up on, in November, we're in Kansas City with the Hoop team, and we played St. Louis. And I told Kevin Saul, I said, hey, I think I was with him and a couple boosters. I said, hey, I think I have somebody that would be a good possibility for the pitching lab, for the naming. And I had Tommy Hotovy in my head, pitching coach for the Cubs, who I've stayed really close to. And Kevin almost immediately said, no, it's great. We have something in mind for that. So I just kind of moved on. I didn't delve and say, what are you thinking or anything like that. I immediately went on to the next thing. So I maybe should have picked up on that. And then when they did the itinerary for the evening, you know, I co-emceed it with Mike Kennedy, and I'm very anal. I look at the notes and who's here and segues and this and that to make sure it moves quickly. And at the end, it just said special announcement or special recognition. And I never asked. I never said, hey, what's this? But anyway, I was touched. I was flattered. I was legitimately emotional, teared up, but very, very honored. It's something that I think is really cool.
Brent Chemnitz is our guest. Now, you would be the first to admit that things have changed in college baseball, not only with the transfer portal and NIL, but in the way pitchers are taught. I mean, it's become a far more, you joked about being analytical, and not that you aren't, but you coach more from the heart and instincts and getting to know your individual pitchers and what made them tick and how you could reach each one of them. What are your thoughts on where pitching is today?
You bring up a lot of good points. So, yeah, the pitching laboratory performance lab, I have had more than one person say, dude, that fits you perfect, kind of in a fun way. Because, yeah, the analytics and the data and all that stuff, I said, that's great. My data is get three dudes out before they score. That's my one thing that I stick to. And as you always have said, keep the ball down.
But absolutely.
It's not something that I go back to the conversation I have with so many pro guys. I'm going to call them old school guys, guys like David Chad, Jim Hendry, some of those guys that are still in the game, Greg Miller. They say, okay, here's the deal. There's plenty of old school guys still there. But if you want to keep your job, you better be well aware of the analytics. You can't stiff arm it. You need to use it. But my deal is, and they will say this when pressed a little bit, there's still guys in the game that say, hey, if you get too wrapped up in that, we're in trouble. So I think information's good, but I think the key, and this goes back to me with the pitchers I had forever, the genius in coaching is figuring out what makes each guy click, like you said. Some guys want information, and they can use it, and it benefits them. Some guys, you better just keep it as simple. You better dumb it down. We had a guy named Don Heinkel, the first All-American. I had him in my first 4 years here. Went on to be the winningest pitcher in college baseball history. And he was very analytical. He wanted information. He was able to, you know, use it to his advantage, went on to become a doctor, pitched in the big leagues, you know, Don Heinkel. So Don, it was great, even in my early years. Had a guy named Ryan Elkert, college pitcher of the year in 82. And he needed, you know, some adjustments with his delivery. So I took this old school, whatever you called him in 1981 and 82, and filmed him, showed it to him, and said, look, you're arching off. You need to stay level. You need to not come and force it and go too over the top. So we used it way, way, way back when, but now it's much more advanced, it's usable. I'm thrilled we have Anthony Claggett, our pitching coach. I told him, I said, this lab's perfect, and I'm thrilled that we have it, but thank God it's you and not me, because I go back to the old paralysis, my analysis. I was be under control, get to a power position, throw downhill out front, and then, yes, talk every dude up. Get dudes to believe they were better than they probably were, and individualize it. So that was my style, figure out what makes each guy click.
Yeah, you know, we hear a lot about in baseball how things are cyclical and the trends over time will change and how people play the game and approach the game. But that was when there wasn't nearly as much information available. And now it's oversimplified, I think, but there's a lot of velocity and there's a lot of launch angle and hard hit percentage. Is this permanent in your mind? Is this an element that will become cyclical? We have all the information in the world and it doesn't seem to be changing, so will it ever?
Well, that's a great question. And I don't think analytics or whatever term you want to use or all the stuff they have, the technology, it's not going to go away. I think the guys that are going to be really good are the guys that know how to use it without hiding behind it, so to speak. I mean, it's like, okay, this is good information. My deal was always three things with the fastball. And Bob Luce knows this because he took our baseball pitching class, or our theory of baseball, and aced it. There's three things with the fastball. There's velocity, there's command, and there's movement. Number one is command. A spotted fastball is the best pitch in baseball, and that's never going to change for me. Spy your fastball. Second's movement. Late life, sink, run it in, whatever. And third's velocity. But I never downplayed velocity. What velocity will do is it maybe gives you a bigger margin of error. But if you just have velocity, guys are going to be able to gear up for it and turn it around in a hurry. But velocity can give you more margin of error. If you're a high school kid throwing 90, you may throw it by some guys with slow bats. If you're in college throwing 95, you're probably going to be able to throw it by some guys. So every level, I never downplay velocity, but it's still third for me. Spotting up's one, movement two, velo three.
Brent Chemnitz, our guest for the final time, at least for the foreseeable future here on the Bob and Jeff Show. So you talked about some pitchers that you've worked with, and you could go on and talk about dozens of them. Which pitcher overachieved the most in your time at Wichita State? I'm going to throw two names out there and see if they stick, because neither of these guys was very big. Neither of them threw exceptionally hard, but both of them had shocker Hall of Fame careers. Travis Wyckoff and Charlie Gendron. Would those two be near the top of your list?
Well, they would, and both were All-Americans. Travis Wyckoff made our all 25-year team. Sometimes he relieved, sometimes he started. He was that guy that just gave me the day off. So you could definitely put him in that category. Charlie Gendron, he was inducted a year ago into the Wichita State Hall of Fame. Once again, All-American. I tried to get him to redshirt. That's how smart I am, when he was a freshman, because I didn't think he'd get a lot of time. And he said, hey, it's going to do me no good. I'm going to be here 4 years. And those years he stayed for, unless he signed after three, he said, it will do me no good because I'm going to med school. I'll graduate in 4 years. He said, I understand. I've got a lot of work to do, but whatever innings you can get me, if I earn them, that's great. We ends up being a freshman All-American, wins a game in the regional in Fresno, and was winning. I don't think he got the win, but he the game we beat Florida State, national championship year, I think he gave us six innings. So he was a guy that definitely overachieved. A couple other guys, that Kenny Steenstra. I mean, Kenny Steenstra in high school, now he was a winner. He was like the all-time winningest high school pitcher ever. From a small town in Missouri, I went to see him. He's 82, 84, but he had a good changeup. I don't know. It was just a gut feel from my end. I didn't hide behind velocity. He came in here 1 year, went 17-0, and actually did pitch in the big leagues. So Kenny comes into my head, and then there's some other guys that just maybe overachieved. You look at a Pat Sedano, the number two guy on the national championship team. Actually, Brummett did pitch in the big leagues and was an All-American. But he's a guy that Northwest High School, 86, 88. I heard Norm DeBrien one time, the then coach at Arkansas. I said, you guys take Brummett. He's 86, 88. Every high school kid in America that went on to play in college was 86, 88. All of a sudden, this guy's an All-American. He's winning games in Omaha. So there's a ton of them. It's easy to remember the Dreiferts and the Pelfreys and the Loopers, the freak of nature talents. And I did have Randy Johnson in Alaska. But it took him a lot of years to figure it out. So something I learned early on, if you recruit some dudes, some talented dudes, and talk them up a level, they make you look good.
Randy Johnson still talks about you quite often.
as he should. Actually, I did no have question. Some guys that played with him in the big leagues, guys like Dreiferts, and they said, yeah, Randy Johnson, he said to tell you hello. And I was like, oh, he remembered me. I had him in 84 in Anchorage. People will say, okay, who's the best pitcher you ever had? And they're thinking I'm going to pop out, you know, Looper or Pelfrey or Dreiferts or one of them. And I said, well, actually, it's not that hard. It's a guy named Randy Johnson. I had him in Alaska. So that's kind of an easy way out on the question. And then I get into the Wichita State guys. But I say if I helped Randy Johnson, it took him like 6 years to sink in because I had him in 84 and he didn't really come into his own till like 89 or 90.
Well, Brent, we always have enjoyed our conversations. They'll continue, just not on the air for a while. We'll see what happens. But thank you for being on our show so frequently over the years and for making the Wichita Treasure show really a Wichita treasure.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you teed me up for that. This makes me sad. I saw that, so then I texted you. I was worried when they moved your slot, and then you said, well, it really doesn't change anything for us. We just tape it. And I still didn't like the feel of that, so I hate it. I hope you guys come back. Well, one quick question. I know you got to go on. What was your favorite time slot? 7 to 9, 9 to 11, 2 to 4, 4 to 6, or obviously a 1, 5 to 7. Did you have a favorite?
Without League 42, I'd probably say 4 to 6. But I'd say 9 to 11 was perfect. You're done by 11. You're on to, you know, you can go to the bars then around noon. It's all good.
Exactly. Then everything comes together at the bar in the afternoon. So, well, you guys have had a great run. I hope you take a little time off and come back because even though I give you guys a hard time, it's always very entertaining, and you guys, to anybody that has done any radio, for you guys to sustain it that long is phenomenal, so congratulations.
Thanks, Brent.
Thank you.
And congratulations to you, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Have a good day.
Brent Chemnitz from Wichita State. Jesse Newell, our guest from the Kansas City Star, Chiefs beat writer. His final appearance on the Bob and Jeff Show. Many more appearances on other shows, I'm sure, to come for you, Jesse. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So we had Adam Teicher on yesterday, but we can't get too much Chiefs, obviously, as they're trying to win their third in a row down in New Orleans against the Philadelphia Eagles. What has to happen for that to happen? What if you had a list of here's what the Chiefs have to do, what would be the top two or three on that list?
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts with – this reminds me a little bit of the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, where if you're just going up and down the roster, you're saying, well, the Eagles are probably better here, and they're probably better here, and they're probably a little better here. But where they aren't always better is the quarterback position and the head coach position. I know it's maybe often taken for granted now, but, like, Patrick Mahomes played his best game of the season last week against the Bills, and him playing his best game of the season or close to it in this game is going to be really important for the Chiefs because, you know, he's got some obstacles to overcome. The other part of this, I just think the Chiefs have done a really good job all year of stopping the run, but Saquon Barkley has kind of been a different animal for the Eagles, and not only has he been able to be efficient with his runs, but sometimes when you don't get him down early, he turns a 10-yard run into an 80-yard run and completely flips the game, and you know, they run the ball at a rate that basically nobody else does. They are totally comfortable just giving that thing back to him and believing that he can not only get 7, 8, 9 yard gains, but also can get, you know, 60, 70, 80 yard gains as well. So I think stopping the run is obviously important for the Chiefs because of the way the Eagles play, but top of the list is kind of always in these situations, which is Patrick Mahomes always, these games always seem to bring out his absolute best, especially late in games. And if that can happen again, then the Chiefs are obviously going to have a shot in this thing.
What areas, you know, outside of just having Mahomes, do the Chiefs have to really assert themselves? Because you're right, it's probable that the Eagles have a better overall roster, and you say, well, they have to stop the run, and they have to battle that really good offensive line, and the Eagles have a good defensive line. What areas can the Chiefs really excel and have an advantage in this game?
Well, I think defensively, this sort of plays into what they do well, which is the blitz. You know, there's certain quarterbacks, Josh Allen being one of them, it's hard to blitz him because he can run by you. He's been good against the blitz most of the year, and the Chiefs still were able to get, you know, their unblocked pressure late in the game, that fourth and five to kind of seal the game. And even then, you know, Don Kincaid has a chance to catch the ball and completely change the complexion of the game. So some teams are just more blitzable than others, and I think this team, the Eagles, is very blitzable, if you will. Like, Jalen Hurts doesn't handle pressure very well. He holds on the ball too long, and when he does hold on the ball, he takes a lot of sacks. This is a potential time when the Chiefs' defense can kind of play up to its strengths and play up to Steve Spagnuolo's strengths, which is how creative can you get and how can you send a certain type of pressure that is going to get there and not have a guy be ready for it. I think that's number one. That's one thing that the Chiefs can definitely exploit in that particular part of this. And then, I mean, outside of that, offensively, it's a tough matchup because of what the Eagles are, which is they're sound at all levels, and they're sound like, if you look at their pass defense, they're good over the middle, they're good to the left, they're good to the right. I mean, you really have to just take what is given to you, basically, against them. But the Chiefs struggled a couple weeks ago when they faced the Houston Texans, and they had a couple of lockdown corners, and we know this Eagles team has some guys out there that can really shut you down. So I think this is going to be a collaborative effort for the Chiefs. And once again, I mean, we kind of go back to the Chiefs playing their hits, which is like Andy Reid getting 2 weeks to prepare for a team, and what can you scheme up, and how can you get guys open when potentially, you know, your receiver struggled a couple weeks ago when they went up against really tight and sticky corners out there on the outside. So those are a couple things that I think if you're looking at saying that this Chiefs offensive and defensive coaching staff have a little bit of advantage and have an advantage when they get extra time to prepare, this is a really good team for that. You can create some pressure against Jalen Hurts that he has a struggle going against. You potentially can create some openings against the Philadelphia Eagles defense, which has been really good all year against the pass. But maybe the Chiefs can scheme something up to get themselves open, like they did 2 years ago with the corn dog, like they did last year with Tom and Jerry. You know, there's always something up their sleeve, it seems like, especially in these big games.
Jesse Newell, our guest from the Kansas City Star, Chiefs beat writer. So instead of talking about this game, I want you to address what happens after this game. What kind of shape are the Chiefs in for the 2025 season? Their cap, free agents, what do they need to do to bolster their team and try to run it back perhaps, potentially, next season as well? Where are they in that regard?
The Chiefs have been really good about not putting too many resources into one season and kind of thinking big picture over time. Brett Veach, the GM for the Chiefs, admitted to us a couple months ago that, like, they were in on Marshawn Lattimore as a potential cornerback to bring in, and they wouldn't have potentially tried to go and do that sort of move this year because the three-peat's out there. You know what I mean? They were a little bit more aggressive this year because they thought, hey, this is an opportunity to go make history and do something that no team has ever done before. So because of that and because of some of these things that happen, I mean, we know the Chiefs are like a stars and scrubs team right now. They go pay their stars. They pay Patrick Mahomes. They pay Chris Jones. They've paid big contracts to guys like Juwan Taylor, and even Travis Kelce remains, you know, the top of the market when it comes to tight ends. And so it's hard to keep all your guys, and this is sort of what the salary cap is meant to do, is to bring the top back toward the middle. They'll have limited cap space. They can clear some of that with Patrick Mahomes doing a restructuring. They do that almost every single offseason, so they can clear some space there. But, you know, the biggest names you're talking about are a lot of the guys that they figure to lose into free agency because they're at the end of contracts, which would be Trey Smith, who's going to be one of the richest guards ever in the history of the NFL. With the contract he's going to get this offseason. Nick Bolton, who's been a stabilizing force in the middle of the Chiefs' defense. Justin Reed, who has done nothing but win Super Bowls ever since he signed his 3-year deal with the Chiefs, you know, 3 offseasons ago. Those are the main ones. And then, you know, some of the luxury picks, too. Hollywood Brown, I mean, if he wins a Super Bowl here, and we've seen kind of his offense, the offense take a different form when he's been in there. You know, would he want to run it back with the Chiefs? Could they afford him in that sort of matter? So Their cap situation isn't amazing. You wouldn't expect it to be amazing with all the other players that they have, and they've locked up long term, and that's sometimes what a deal like, you know, signing Chris Jones to a long term deal and basically doing it on his terms, that's what it does for you. It puts you a little bit more hamstrung when it comes to the offseason. But at the same time, I mean, we talked about this a couple weeks ago when you talk about you start with these good teams in the AFC West, and what are the things you start with? You start with the coach, you start with the coaching staff, and you start with the quarterback. And the Chiefs have all those things covered, and they'll have all those things covered next season. So it's not going to look too bad, but it will be interesting to see this offseason kind of where they divert their resources, the resources they have left, and what's at the top of their priority list. Because obviously, if they're going to keep a guy like Trey Smith around, they're going to have to clear some things out to make sure that sort of thing happens.
So we never do this because, you know, it might be a little bit hacky, but you're never, at least for a while, going to be on the show. We won't be able to hold you accountable. So who wins this game?
Listen, it's interesting. I just kind of referenced it on the top, guys. Like, I'm going to do a prediction for this game on Friday, and I feel like I'm going to write what I wrote 2 years ago. If you're going down the list of the roster and you're saying, okay, well, who has the advantage here? You probably say, well, the Eagles have a slight advantage in the run game. The Eagles have a slight advantage on their defensive line. The Eagles have a slight advantage in their coverage. Eagles have a slight advantage. Eagles have a slight advantage here. But then you get to what the Chiefs have become. You know what I mean? And you also get to the Patrick Mahomes factor, which we just can't ignore at this point. Patrick didn't play that great against the Texans. And, you know, I still picked the Chiefs to beat the Bills last week because it's like you just think in these moments he's going to play his absolute best. And we've seen his absolute best. I mean, I figure my prediction is going to be very close to what it was 2 years ago, which is like you can convince me that the Eagles are going to win this game. You can convince me that the Chiefs will struggle to stop Saquon Barkley. You can convince me, you know, that this is a time where the Chiefs, you know, their good run when it comes to close one-score games is going to run out at the wrong time. But you can add all those things up, and at the end of the day, I can also tell you that we've seen this script before. We saw it 2 years ago. We saw it in the last 17 games that they've won in one-score games, and we've seen it when Patrick Mahomes comes through in the biggest of moments or when Andy Reid needs a play call and pulls it out in the most clutch of moments. So my lean is the Chiefs. With this season and what they've done and the history of this quarterback and this coach, it's going to be really hard to pick against them until somebody dethrones the Kings. And so I don't have an exact score for you.
I think
somewhere close. Yeah, so somewhere close to what it was a couple years ago.
I think I probably echo everything you said. But then I get to 2 years ago, the Eagles' number one running back was Kenneth Gainwell. It's Saquon Barkley now. I don't know. It's going to be a whale of a game. Jesse, as always, we appreciate your time. We know we never take it for granted. We know you're a busy guy, but you've always been great about coming on our show and talking about first KU basketball and football, and now the Chiefs, and thank you for doing that over these years.
Appreciate it, guys. I won't call it a retirement like Adam Teicher, but congratulations on whatever you guys want to call this.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jesse. There's Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star, frequent guest of our show. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll visit with Sunrise Academy boys basketball coach Kyle Lindstedt. Big tournament coming up this weekend here in our city. We'll get more of the details about that from Coach Lindstedt next.